Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. On October 26th of 2017, President Trump declared the opioid crisis a national public health emergency. Also in October, a roadmap for a statewide targeted response to the opioid crisis was released. So how far have we come in the past 9 months, and where are we going? We talk this hour about addressing opioid overuse and abuse in South Dakota. Later in the hour, we'll hear from two women whose lives have been upended by addiction. But first, let's look at the statewide efforts and policies to save lives. Joining us for the conversation in our studio in Sioux Falls, we have Tiffany Wolfgang. She's director for the Division of Behavioral Health Services with South Dakota Department of Social Services. Tiffany, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us, we have Tim Rave. He's a vice president of public policy for Sanford Health. Tim, thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
And on the phone, Tom Martinez. He is the Deputy Secretary for the South Dakota Department of Health. Tom, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we're going to start in the studio here with Tiffany. Can you give us a brief overview of sort of what this advisory committee was about, just to catch everybody up?
Sure. The federal government had awarded a couple different federal level grants, the CDC grant that the Department of Health oversees, as well as the Department of Social Services, the STR grant, or the State Targeted Response to the Opioid Crisis grant. And knowing that we wanted to leverage resources from both of those funding sources, and then under the direction of the governor, an advisory council was put together. So we had broad representation on that committee, really helping guide and shape the roadmap, reviewing the needs assessment information, and then developing the strategic plan with the 13 targeted goals really came out of that advisory committee.
And as I understand it, and for folks who were watching on TV with Stephanie Risler when she did a South Dakota Focus with an hour of this conversation, the problem in South Dakota is not as extensive as it is in other states, and that presents somewhat of an opportunity as well as a challenge for the state, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. In South Dakota, we feel like we have the opportunity to get ahead of the crisis and hopefully not see the impact that other states have seen in this area. Although through the needs assessment and through some of that data gathering, we recognize there are issues in South Dakota, but with education, intervention, and prevention, we feel like we have an opportunity to not go down the same road some of the other states have been down.
The whole nation is sort of paying attention when President Trump kind of throws, some executive heft behind this, and there's a big conference, and, since then there's been some criticism. Has enough been done? Other people have said, yes, this is exactly what we needed. Were we, Tiffany, in South Dakota already laying the groundwork for this, or did the presidential leadership push us further along a certain path?
I think a combination of both of those. I think in South Dakota, we're very well aware of good practice and making sure we're doing our due diligence across the board. But I think because we hadn't seen the crisis that other states have seen, we had an opportunity to kind of raise our eyes up and go, wow, look at what's happening elsewhere. Let's take a look at what's happening in South Dakota and make sure we don't go down those roads. And so the heavy emphasis on prevention, intervention, and education is what you saw through the first year.
Right. Tim, I want to bring you into the conversation next and talk a little bit from Sanford's viewpoint, what the state leadership and some of those collaborations look like in the health industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just to jump off of where Tiffany was at, we, all of us in healthcare and State Department of Health recognized this crisis coming, and as she had stated, saw it coming from other states. And so we had a chance to jump into this early. And just within Sanford ourselves, we had put in some best practices with our physicians, our other providers, to make sure we were on top of the issue, looking at it, trying to educate our providers on, hey, bring down your level of prescribing when necessary or when applicable, and just putting those best practices in. And we've seen just a dramatic decrease in prescriptions and tablet prescribing over that time. A 30% decrease in actual tablets that have been prescribed, and a 23% decrease in actual prescriptions for opioids just in the last year, just by simply educating physicians. So that really goes hand in hand with where the roadmap is at, which kind of fine-tunes tunes in the 13 points, really fine tunes the direction that we're all going to go as providers, working hand in hand with the state and law enforcement, and trying to find that balance of education, still treating patients appropriately, but trying to find alternatives for pain management when we can.
Did you find that the physicians and healthcare providers in your health system, you know, had some pretty quick buy-in? Did they feel like many patients did, sort of betrayed? Is that too strong of a word? By how these pills, for example, were marketed to them by the drug industry?
Two points there. I think one, yes, very quick buy-in. I mean, everybody recognized that we hit a crisis, kind of hit that tipping point, and it was very, very quick for people to go, oh, we need to do something. I think betrayed is probably not the right word. I think if you look back historically, I mean, really from the federal level, they drove actually reimbursement and other things based on managing that pain scale for those patients. And so, and in fact, no one wants to see people in pain. And so it's very easy for providers to say, you know, let's go ahead and prescribe a little bit more here and get your pain down to zero. When maybe in hindsight we should have, you know, kind of stayed in that 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 on a pain scale number. And so it, I think from that perspective, I'm not sure betrayal is the right word, but I think just recognizing that we need to address that.
I'm going to bring Tom into the conversation now. Tom, thanks for being here with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And let's talk a little bit about what elements of the roadmap have already been implemented. Where, as Tiffany said, this is a 13, point, different strategies here. There's a lot that is contained in this. And where do you begin? How do you sort of lay this out in the collaboration?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, because of the immediacy of the issue, we really kind of hit the ground running, both the state agencies and the advisory committee. By the time we got that, the roadmap kind of drafted and finalized, we had already actually started the implementation of some of the key strategies. For example, we had a pretty robust naloxone project, and naloxone is the medication that counteracts an opioid overdose. We wanted to make sure that all first responders, all law enforcement, all ambulance services in the state had adequate supplies of naloxone to address those overdose situations. So through an effort that we started last fall that went on for a couple months, we trained these first responders how to use naloxone and then provided them with a product as well. And then we're continuing that project by resupplying those entities that need that. Another strategy that we implemented right away because it was so key was the prescriber education. As Tim was talking, prescribers, the doctors have been very receptive to this issue. And from day one, they were on board with working with us, working with the state agencies to help educate doctors on appropriate opioid prescribing and just to raise some general awareness about the issue. And then hand in hand with that, we embarked on almost immediately a public education campaign. We've put up a new website. With any kind of public health issue like this, the public education and awareness of this issue really is critical to effectively addressing an issue like this.
And Tom, that seems like a little bit of a surprise as I look through the roadmap and I see, you know, how much effort is being put into that public education piece. Is there data supporting that is going to be as effective as it seems to imply in the report?
Yes, there is. And again, with an issue like this, where there's a, there's some personal responsibility, quite frankly, involved in it. The public needs to be aware of the dangers of opioid use, and you know, it's important that opioids have a legitimate place in modern medicine and healthcare, and not everyone that uses opioids is necessarily abusing opioids, but understanding the dangers and the concerns that go along with that use, again, not just for prescribers but for the public, we feel that is an important message to get out there, and it's important for folks to understand that.
Tim, from a healthcare perspective, are patients, you know, giving that feedback to their physicians, and is that coming to you as far as what patients are saying about the changes and the awareness that has increased?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is critical that the patients have buy-in to other alternatives to opioids. That is probably, as Tom said, that's probably the biggest hurdle that you have, because obviously people don't want to be in pain. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, all of us, I think, as patients would go, oh gosh, it'd be better to have the opioid than the whatever. I mean, ibuprofen. Well, you know, you might have a little pain with the ibuprofen, but you won't have those long-term challenges and side effects with that you would have with the opioid. So, I mean, I think it's imperative that the public as a whole goes, oh, yeah, there are other ways to do this, and it might not be as great as it was, but we still need to be part of the solution. Yeah. And then there's not that pushback on the provider as well.
Right. Tiffany, as we look at the roadmap as a whole, there's a whole lot of collaboration. Things are divided up. You know, who will have responsibility for this? Who's moving this project forward? Did you find that this was a natural transition to sort of do a major project like this with multi-agency efforts, because it's what you do in the state of South Dakota every day? Or was this we have to work on some, you know, behind-the-scenes strategies to make sure that we are tracking what success looks like across the state?
I think a little bit of both. I agree. You know, in South Dakota, we're very accustomed to working closely together. I will tell other states when I'm interacting with other directors that we're fortunate because we can be a small city in some large state. So you know who to reach out to. You know who to collaborate with. Mm-hmm. However, through this process, we did identify some additional collaboration and communication that we really did need to work on. The connection between the medical professionals and the addiction treatment professionals, and making sure that if we identify someone who may need some assistance in the area of addiction, that we have those connections and folks know who to reach out to make a referral for their patient or work collaboratively to provide the right level of treatment for that individual. So that was an area that did come out of the needs assessment, and work is being done in that area.
Tom, give me an idea if there were areas that you immediately thought, you know, we sort of have a handle on this, as it were. This was easy to launch something. And then let's move into talking about some areas where, you know, we're up against some bigger challenges. Let's start with something that, and maybe you've already covered that, but are there other thoughts of places where we feel now, 9 months after this roadmap was published or released to the public at least, that we've made some really good traction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And fortunately, we're already starting, as Tim referred to earlier, we're already starting to see kind of the trends change as far as prescribing. And we're starting to see some indications that there's a greater, you know, level of public education awareness regarding opioid abuse here in South Dakota. But again, we got to continue these efforts, and there's kind of, again, with all kind of public health related issues, there's rarely kind of a quick fix kind of solution. This is going to be a long term kind of deal. As Tiffany said, we're fortunate, you know, we're not experiencing the crisis that other states are seeing, so that's an advantage to us. But at the same time, we can't let our guard down. We got to be diligent. We got to continue these efforts that we started, and then actually expand on them and look for other measures and other steps that we can take to address opioid abuse here in South Dakota now, and to make sure that we don't start sliding in the wrong direction.
I want to get down into some of the more specifics here in the plan, and let's talk about some of those things that are maybe a little more challenging. Tiffany, is that in an area of treatment, or Tim, or who wants to jump in on that one? Where are some of the areas that you think are going to be more of a challenge from a resource perspective to handle in the state of South Dakota?
I think, you know, a challenge that we're up to, however, I think we want to be aware of, is just some of the workforce challenges that we have. If we see an increased need for treatment, if we see an increased need for services, you know, we're very fortunate that we have low unemployment, but sometimes that's a challenge, as well as you're trying to recruit folks to work in the behavioral health field. Sure. So that's a piece that we're keeping our eye on. The other, I don't know if I would you know, categorize this as a challenge, more of an opportunity to really bridge the world between, you know, normalizing or being okay talking about addiction, and that it can happen in my family, and we don't need to hide this, and we don't need to be scared of it. It's a disease, and let's work collaboratively under the health umbrella to help, you know, help folks find their path to recovery. You know, with opioids, sometimes that's medication-assisted treatment. So there's a collaborative effort between, you know, the prescribing provider as well as the addiction counselor to make sure that individual has the appropriate resources to deal with the addiction. So I look at that as an opportunity, but it will come with challenges.
Right. I hadn't thought of that workforce development sort of idea. If you build something or grow it, you still have to have the professionals do. Mm-hmm. Are there efforts to sort of, and I don't, maybe this is a question for someone in education, but Tom, are there efforts to sort of push people and collaborate with universities and colleges, similar to what we've seen in you know, the legal profession with rural lawyers and things like that? Are there efforts, conversations about that?
Well, we're certainly at the with the advisory committee. That's one of the discussions we've had is how can we partner with our universities or our teaching institutions, not only to help them help us educate, you know, these future healthcare professionals, but also to generate some interest in this particular area of healthcare.
Right. What are your thoughts, Tim, on that?
Well, I think just to the workforce issue, it came to me as we were discussing it here that, you know, in healthcare per se, we don't have necessarily those challenges that I think the treatment, the mental health and treatment end is going to have as this continues to evolve into more of a recognizing the problem and then addressing the treatment end. That is where I think we'll have some workforce challenges. I think the other thing that we've seen as this has evolved is the getting down to the just day-to-day logistics and finding the different areas where we can improve. So we've kind of really focused on the outpatient, you know, you come to the clinic, you get a prescription, you go home. We've really focused on that. I think next area is inpatient for us, mm-hmm. and really managing those folks. And then continued transparency to the providers to say, this is where you're ranking amongst your peers, not divulging who the peers are, but you know, in that unidentified information going, oh gosh, I'm 10% higher than my peers. I wonder why. Maybe it's my patient mix or maybe it's not. Right. And so those are the things that continue to evolve. I think from a Sanford perspective, also we have the ability as an enterprise with our footprint to take some of this and move to other states. And we've already done that, in fact, in North Dakota. In my position, I helped facilitate bringing some of our educational materials up to North Dakota to the Medical Association, and they use that in their training program for their physicians statewide in their organization, and so outside the Sanford footprint even. So we're learning from each other. We're taking all of what we learn here and actually to expand that outside of our local footprint.
Are you seeing in other states different efforts from other state governments that you're responding to? And how does that compare to what's happening in South Dakota? You have a unique perspective on that.
I would say similar efforts. I mean, there might be some nuances in different plans. You know, their roadmap might look a bit different than ours, but generally the concepts are all the same. It's educating providers, educating patients, you know, finding treatment options. They're working at the federal level. They just passed many bills on the opioid crisis. I wouldn't say that any of them are life-changing. I think they all kind of are nibbling around the edges, my mm-hmm. words, of trying to address the problem. Certainly more money for treatment options, grants going forward to create programs. I think that was really kind of the meat of what came out of the bills, the package that just passed a week or so ago, and now I lose track. But
Tom, we're going to have a different conversation, really focusing on the law enforcement aspect of this with some law enforcement professionals. But I'm wondering if you might just address the sense that, you know, what should the balance be between prevention, enforcement, and treatment? Do you have an idea of what that looks like?
Well, there has to be both with this opioid abuse issue because, you know, this is a situation where abuse is, of course, both taking place with legitimate prescription medications that are legitimately prescribed. And then also there's the illicit opioids like heroin and illicit fentanyl, stuff like that. And where we're starting actually to see an uptick in South Dakota, as I understand it, is with those illicit drugs. There have been a number of kind of high-profile big drug busts. Right. related to those kind of illicit substances. And then also we're seeing this, it's a slight uptick in our illicit, our opioid deaths related to illicit opioids too. So there's kind of two facets to this issue, which, you know, which kind of adds some complexity to the situation, and really the two very different approaches, I think, to both of those issues.
Right. We need to take a break. We're going to have more with this conversation in just a moment. We're dedicating this entire hour to a conversation about the opioid crisis and sort of keeping it at bay in South Dakota and addressing the problems that we do have. Later on in the hour, you're going to hear from two women whose lives have really been overturned by substance abuse, but we'll have more with our current panel of guests in just a moment. Stay in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're spending our first hour of the program today talking about the opioid crisis and how to prevent and eliminate opioid overuse and abuse in the state of South Dakota. My guests are Tom Martinez. He is the Deputy Secretary for the South Dakota Department of Health. Tiffany Wolfgang is with us. She is Director for the Division of Behavioral Health Services at the Department of Social Services for South Dakota. And Tim Rave is the Vice President of Public Policy for Sanford Health. And Tom, I want to talk a little bit more about medication-assisted treatment. Is that, am I saying that right? What exactly does that... Let's talk about treatment and the different ways that we approach treatment for addiction.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. Well, this falls more into the into Tiffany's area of expertise. But basically, medication-assisted treatment is using medications to treat the opioid addiction. And certainly, if Tiffany wants to expand on the various medications and so on and so forth, I'd invite her to do so.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Tiffany, go ahead.
Sure. You know, there's several FDA-approved drugs that are used for the treatment of opioid use disorder, methadone, buprenorphine, and naltrexone. And so really, you know, it would be our hope that folks, the providers, the medical folks that are able to prescribe those medications really take a look at what's appropriate for the patient that they're working with. You know, the methadone and the buprenorphine do require some additional oversight and training, and the naltrexone is something that can be prescribed. And there's different reasons and different purposes for those medications. So that's really between the provider and the patient to really make sure they're doing the right treatment approach for their clients, in addition to the counseling that you want to be working with that client on or client with to really help identify some patterns of behavior and how can we work through the addiction disorder collaboratively between the medical provider, the counselor, and the patient.
So then are we also facing the challenge of the rural nature of the state, whereas, you know, the different providers might be trained and have expertise in different kinds of treatment, but if you live in Lemon, you might not be, you know, particularly near one of those physicians.
You know, absolutely. That's one of the challenges in South Dakota is the geographical, yeah. The miles between specialty providers and patients. We recently issued a request for proposal, RFP, for the development enhancement to support medication-assisted treatment, with a component of that being some of the professional support to those folks that maybe work out in those communities where you might have a specialty provider back here in Sioux Falls who could provide some consultation services to the primary care provider or nurse practitioner or whomever in these smaller communities. And so that's currently open for bids towards the end of August. We'll be taking a look at who's put proposals in, really with the goal to expand access of that level of treatment across South Dakota.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more, Tim, about this notion of the stigma. And, you know, there's geographic challenges, but we also have to overcome this challenge of I need treatment. I need help, and some of that is might be behavioral from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. I have an understanding that there's some behaviors as well as, you know, some other things, you know, going on. Things Sanford is doing to sort of look at that and encourage people or make it easier, remove the barriers for people to get the help that they need.
Yeah, we have placed mental health therapists in many of our primary care clinics, and so if you come in and say, "Yes, I believe I have a problem," right there at that point of contact, you have the ability to address that with a therapist. So it even just takes a step out of the process, besides any stigma that may or may not be associated with seeking treatment. And I think even along with Tiffany and the geographic challenges we have, I think one of the unique things that we have in South Dakota is that most, a vast majority of our rural providers are affiliated or are part of a major system. And so that gives the ability to educate, train, and give resources to those providers and those APP, those advanced practice providers in those small communities that they might not otherwise have if they were in Lemon all alone. So mm-hmm. I think we have a couple of things going on there.
Yeah. Tiffany, one of the things that must come up in your mind and in your work in particular, everyone's here, but I'm thinking about what is the sense of urgency that you must feel that, you know, people need a certain kind of help, or you know that the help exists to help someone's life be better. But yet you also have to roll things out in a way that's responsible, that, you know, looks at best practices, that's really going to make a difference instead of just look good, like, you know, we did this, but it was ineffective. How do you sort of deal with that personally, that sort of professional challenge that also feels very personal because people's lives are at stake, really?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is the balance, knowing that there's somebody out there right now who would benefit from the help. And so making sure that we are, a lot of times I'll use the word saturating the message out there. We have, you know, as part of the public media campaign, developed the avoidopioidsd.com website that we're hoping folks, maybe they might not want to talk to their provider at this point in time, but I might just want to take a look at this. We've got resources on that website. We've also developed a phone number that folks can call, 1-800-920-4343. We're calling that a connection to resources. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to talk to. So here's a phone number that I can call, and that individual will help connect you to the resources that you may need. Or a lot of times it may be your loved one that you're calling about. It's my brother, it's my mother, it's my sister. And so getting that access to resources for me has been important to make folks aware there is help out there. If you reach out, we'll get you connected to help.
Yeah. Tom, we're looking at a general election in November where we will change and have a new governor. How does the change and a new attorney general, how do changing those roles over sort of impact the progress that we're making right now?
Well, I think that's a very good question, Lori. And I guess time will tell, but my guess is that, whoever our next governor is going to be and whoever our next attorney general is going to be, I think they'll be very fully supportive of the efforts that we've taken to date and that we're planning to take in the future to address opioid abuse. This really, you know, of course, it's not just a South Dakota problem. It's a national problem. And the federal government, the federal agencies, and the federal or federal congressmen and women, they're all on board with this. And I don't see this as a partisan issue or a liberal versus conservative issue. I think it's pretty well recognized in South Dakota and across the country that this is an issue that needs to be addressed at the national level and within each state as well.